Welcome to the Anti-Pattern Podcast, your ticket to the revolution in digital thread technologies. Please welcome, live from Mannheim, Germany, your hosts, Christian Mucheo and Michael Fenning.
Hello and welcome everybody again here to the Anti-Pattern Podcast, basically live from the MuffinX podcast studio, downtown Mannheim, which is really, really rainy today. It just stopped raining. Now that I say that. Anyway, welcome again to the next episode of our podcast. And I keep on saying this is a special episode. This is like the fifth time I say this is a special episode. But this time it's a really, really special episode because we want to use this episode to talk about our first release. Which is happening tomorrow, basically. And yeah, I just wanted to say we achieved a lot of things, in my feeling, especially you, Christian, and Thomas, our developer, our chief architect. Yeah, this is actually really, really looking nice, what we did. And I wanted to say thank you to you and Thomas. This is worth some applause. Really, really nice. Christian keeps on hiding this thing from us. We have that all the time with us. We never used it, right? We should keep on, or we should start using it, actually. So yeah, really, really nice. This is happening tomorrow, our first release. We call it 2508, right? We said we want to do quarter releases, right? Every quarter, one release. And the first one is now August. Next one will be November. And today is about, you know, what's the functionality? What are features that we are already able to deliver after only 7 months of development?
Yep.
And again, we are not developing the next PLM system, right? We don't do that. What we do is we deliver the digital thread platform or digital thread system. We're focusing on the core component for a federated PLM approach. And yeah, my first question to Christian would be, as he's the CTO, makes sense to interview him about the release. Yeah, so how do you feel now?
Yeah, definitely a little bit proud because, yeah, you already said it. And if you have a look how much workforce we have, which is definitely under two people, and what we've achieved in these couple of months is enormous because what we want to do is not a hard-coded app. It's not a short journey. It's a... It's not a short trip. It's a long journey.
It's a marathon and not a sprint.
Exactly. Yeah. And therefore, yeah, of course, we cannot deliver everything from the start on. But I guess what we deliver now, and we will talk about it in the next couple of minutes, is the foundation for what will come. Yeah. And it's absolutely worth everything we've learned in the past about PLM itself, about the technology, about the model-based and model-driven architectures. Everything influenced these developments we did now.
So a lot of learning that we did over the years basically condensed into this solution, and I guess it's fair to say that we have the platform ready to start demos, right, and to start the first project with it, right? It's not saying that the software is ready. Software is never ready. Right? We've never finished it, right? But we have a good starting point for everything that is about to come. So my first, my second question then to you would be, so what's in it? What's in the first release?
So basically, we are speaking of six major... It's not features, but it's like epics or however you would call it. And the first is definitely the modeling platform itself.
Right.
And this is something I'm especially proud of because it's pretty seldom in the market of PLM systems. And I guess in the market of digital thread systems, if there are any, I don't think you find it in this beauty.
So what we said is we want to combine model-based systems engineering or model-based, you know, modeling data, modeling graphically modeling data with a lifecycle management platform, right?
Yeah, exactly. But the real magic happens in this modeling platform when you are creating an entity type, giving it property types and relationship types for connections between entity types. This is really working well, and I think one feature that nobody else is able to deliver is that we can change the data model in runtime if we need it.
In runtime, and you can graphically view the whole thing. True. But what else?
Yeah, an idea that we had right in the beginning was, what can we do differently? And what does not really work well in the old economy, so to say? And that was, we talked about it a couple of times in the past episodes, is the use case of migration and integration. These are always pain points, and they last a long time, and they cost a ton of money. And we talked to each other and said, what is so hard in migrating data or in importing data? It's absolutely clear. You have data which you want to import, and data model, you have it for schema, import, and it's kind of schema. And you have your own schema, and you have to map it. If you can't map it, you have to think about default values, you have to calculate values, and so on. But it's not that complicated. And even easy or uncomplex data, importing it into systems nowadays is something that you need a specialist for.
And I feel like we are the first solution that actually do it. Does it really intuitively, graphically?
Exactly, and that's exactly the solution, that we are doing it graphically, that you see the schema on the one hand, on the internal schema on the other hand, and you can drag and drop the information from the one schema to the other schema, and we already have some use cases in it, like
Splitting,
splitting is one use case, exactly. So if, let's say, on the one hand, on the address, street and number is one field, in the internal data model it's two fields, and you know it's always separated by a space. This is something you can achieve graphically just by dragging and dropping these fields. And I've never seen that before.
Really good. And the other thing, or the next thing we also do graphically, is lifecycle maps.
That's also interesting development, because we are reusing the same component in the background also for other things we're coming to in the next minutes. And these lifecycle maps was also a thing we always encountered as, why is it so hard to view and to edit a lifecycle map?
And create status, transition, and all that kind of stuff graphically, right? Not going into a table and adding stuff. Do it graphically, interactively. Exactly. And then?
The structure browser. Which is also called the context browser or graph viewer, whatever, where we can, from any point in the system, from any entity, you can start the graph and, so to say, visualize the graph. So we always said your data is a graph, not a table, especially when configuration items or entities of different kinds are interacting. And have relationships in between. This is something you can start wherever you want in the graph, and then you can show over and over and over, and one step deeper. You can visualize. It's not another word I was looking for, but
visualize all of it. So the one thing is the graph, and the other thing is hierarchies, right? So you can also show hierarchies as a subset of the graph, And our go-to approach is we load, or we at least are able to load, the multi-hierarchy at once, right? And load more of it, right? It's not that we say only load one level, and then if you want to go deeper, load the next level for the next node, right? You know, if you're familiar with most BOM apps out there, right? Legacy BOM apps, usually BOM means one level, right? And the special case would be the multi-level BOM. And for us, it's actually the other way around. Multi-level BOM is the go-to approach, right? And the load just one level is just, you know, boring, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's some feature, some secret sauce also in the API in the background enabling this feature, but yeah. Right. Something we took care about.
Yeah. And the two of us do this podcast in English, right? So mm-hmm. in our heads, we always keep on translating from German to English. That was my segue to the next feature, localization.
So what's localization? Localization is, I think it's a very important end user feature. And it's mostly just for the user interface. Of course, we had to do something in the background, in the API, that everything is supported. But in the end, it's really a user experienceable feature, which means on the one hand, we tried to be independent from the languages we support. So means there are multi-language strings or multi-language elements.
Right.
And you are not limited in how many languages you want to have this one or the other or everything in the system.
And you're also flexible because you don't need to translate everything. So let's say you define 16 system languages, whatever. And you don't have to give it a value each time, right? If it's not necessary or not, you know, done, whatever. So this is really interesting because I know systems. Of course, they have multi-language fields, right? But they then force you to always translate for all of the system languages that have been defined up front. So we are a little bit flexible here. There is a fallback always, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't, you know, have the value for, let's say, French, right? Yeah. Fallback will be English or something like this. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a configurable fallback strategy in the background. The next feature is, which is so obvious, maybe you know that you need the field also not only in German and in English, so also in French and Italian, but you're not speaking French and Italian. What do you do today? You're asking an AI to translate it for you. Yeah, and there is a simple button in our interface that you say, okay, I want also Italian, I want also French on this field, and please translate it for me.
That's actually the most obvious use case for AI.
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, I have been talking in my past, right? We have been talking about so many AI use cases and we're thinking about what can we do with AI. And the most easy and most obvious one was always translating stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, you know, this is not long text even, right? This is just, you know, a couple of words maybe, right? Even less. So this is so obvious to me and it was so easy to implement, right? And I'm really wondering why the other folks are not doing this, right? It's just so easy.
Yeah, I can't understand it either. And that's not all in localization. So especially when I see European software, typically for example, the date is written in a European way. Yeah. If you have American software, very often you only see the American way.
Right.
Why not supporting both just in context of the browser of the user?
Right.
This is also something we took care about. Next thing is delimiters in float numbers, for example. And I think a very special feature of this localization epic is the ability to also enter fractions. Mm-hmm. We know it from our American friends that they very often measure things in 1/8 of an inch or something like that. And 1/8 is pretty easy. It's 0.125 written in decimals, but what is 53/57th? This is something that you don't do in your head. And why not just entering exactly that?
What you want to enter? I keep on thinking. I'll try to remember what my actual head size is. You know, for a head, I guess it's 7 5 over 8 or something like this. So a little bit below 8 inch.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure. I have a big head. My usual helmet size is XXL in German. So anyway, so I guess it's 7.5 or 8 or something like this. So roughly 60 centimeters. So this is a use case, definitely, right? And why not build it in right from the beginning? And my feeling even is if we want to have that, if you want to use something like that, building it in later, like in a legacy tool now, it's not impossible, right? Definitely not, but it's hard, right?
It's painful often.
If you have it right from the beginning, it is really, really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to implement upfront and not later.
Yeah.
Right. And then I read one more.
Yeah. And this is a very interesting feature, which is touching the history of of an element. And we are definitely not speaking of the version. No, it's not the version history.
Yeah.
That's something else. For us, it's
more granular.
It's even more granular. It's more, if you know how Git works, it's a commit history, so
right.
to say, in technical terms.
Right.
Means it's a record of each and every change you are doing on this entity. Yeah.
You see in one view who changed what when.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically it. And as we said, we don't want to have a save button. So the history will be triggered with each modification of any field, right?
Yeah.
And if you do it via the API, right, everything that happens at once, right, is basically one commit. But that's it. Yeah. And this is the most, I'm not sure if we could do it even more granular than that. I don't think so.
Right? Wouldn't make sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
We even are thinking about squashing this information
later.
Again when something is released or some business logic behind.
Yeah.
Because it's very granular. But basically we are able to do that. Find another system which is able to do that. I know one other system.
Yeah. I mean, today there is basically no restriction on disk space anymore.
Yeah, basically no.
Yeah. So we don't have that problem.
And as you said before, integrating such a feature later is hard to up to impossible.
It's a pain in the A, yeah.
Yeah. And so we have it from the start and we can make it more easy if you don't need this granularity of level of information.
Right. So that basically is the not all of it, right, but it's the most important features or epics, as you said, that we came up with for the first release. It took us 7 months to do this.
Yeah.
1.8 developers, something like this. I helped specifying and I helped delivering use cases. I'm not completely unguilty of the release, but that is what we came up with. It's a huge set of functionality. There will be more in the future, right? But it's a good starting point to actually implement. My question to you would then be, given that we have those six big features, epics, usually you would categorize features into being must-haves, right? This is something you have to have if you want to compete in the market, right? And there is some, delightful or amazing features. This is what the Kano model talks about, right? I translated it from German again. Could be a different word, but I feel like amazing is a really good fit. So how would you categorize those six features? What is must-have and what is amazing?
Yeah, so definitely amazing is feature 2 and 5. So the mapping engine, it's a comfort feature, of course.
Right,
yeah,
and
it's not crucial to have it or not have it, but having it is amazing for the end user, the administrators of our customers. And also the localization feature is cool. It's really nice to see. But it's not about winning or losing a customer.
Right.
So in other words, the must-have is point 1, 3, 4, and 6. So the modeling platform itself, the lifecycle maps, the structure browser, and the history. They are basics. Yeah? And with these basics, we feel to be able to do demos and to, gain first experience with customers on a POC, for example.
Right. And what I want to add is then, so this is the must-haves, right? Mm-hmm. Even in the must-haves, at least in one feature, that this is the one thing I wanted to point out, the data modeling that we do, or the meta model that we defined and the way we do data modeling for domain-specific data models. Mm-hmm. The way we do it is more enhanced than all of the other platforms I've known or got to know in the past. And this is because, as we said, we have entity types, we have relationship types, we have property types, and we have actual property types, right? We can reuse properties, right? And property types are first-class citizens compared mm-hmm. to entity types, which will allow us in the future to be able to make rights and roles even or control rights and roles and access, right, to information down to the attribute, down to the property level, mm-hmm. which is something I've never, well, okay, for the tools that I know by heart, they can't do it. Maybe others, but from what I know, it's really special, and this allows us to do this basically. So
and not just by implementing some business logic yep. in code, but doing this natively in the data model.
Yeah, by means of the meta model. Yeah, definitely. So you may have been categorizing them as must-haves, but even in those must-haves, we have stuff in there that is pretty amazing and pretty unique because we learn from the past.
Absolutely, and there is much more than we can cover in one episode.
Right. Okay, and then, so what's next? So this is the first release. We will issue that tomorrow, right? And what's happening now?
Yeah, the next month, of course, we will improve it. That's clear. But the good news for us is we have the first two customer workshops in
already scheduled,
exactly scheduled, and I think we will learn a lot from that, and I think and I hope that we can also help our customers with what we are showing. And we are in October on the TDSE, the National Symposium of the German Chapter of INCOSI. Which is happening in Austria, exactly.
Funny enough.
And this is our first public demo, so to say. So we have a booth there.
Yeah, just to get it straight, we are participating in the tool vendor project mm-hmm. on Wednesday afternoon. So if you guys make it to Salzburg, please step by. Join our presentation and talk to us on our booth, right? Yeah, this is late October. And then next release in November. Can
exactly.
you give us some spoiler? What is the November release then about?
Oh, yeah. We have much in the pipeline.
Only one spoiler. Don't have to say everything we do.
Oh, one. If I have to choose one, oh, what would it be? What would you like to have as a CEO?
I know, because I did see you working on it yesterday, so... This one that you worked on yesterday.
What did I work on yesterday?
This one here, it's down here.
I
underlined it for you.
Oh, that one. Yeah, the UI builder.
The enhanced UI builder, yes.
Yeah. Okay, that will definitely be another very nice feature. And this is also... Yeah, something like a what you see is what you get editor for the UI, and will increase development speed and lower investments.
Right.
This, in a magnitude.
Yeah, of course. And why is this so important for us? As we said, we are a no-code platform, right? To a large extent, no-code. Little low-code here and there, right? Wherever it's necessary, but no-code, right? And looking into the UI, we already have no code functionality to build something in the UI, right, and show properties automatically. But we, of course, want to give users the ability to model their own, you know, masks is what they call them, right? So model their own pieces of UI that can be reused all the time without coding, right, without coding. And that's really, really important for us because that makes things really fast, nice, and configurable. Right. And last but not least, so this was, you know, kind of an overview. What is happening now, you know, in terms of the release? Tomorrow we will release it, right? You will find videos. So I will upload for each of the features that we described today, upload one video, some very small, short video that you see what it looks like in the tool, right?
Mm-hmm.
You will also find that on our website. And then next week, I will send out basically one LinkedIn post per day to show the video, right? And if you're interested and if you like what you see, we are now starting scheduling demo sessions with us, right? Mm-hmm. There will be very easy a link in the caption of the video that you can just click on, right? And then you can basically schedule an appointment with us where we can do a demo, ask and you can ask questions and we will answer them. So this is happening the next couple of days, right? And then first release is then done, and then looking forward to the first customer projects, and then it's only 3 months and then we will have the next release, mm-hmm. right? As it is supposed to be, right? So with that being said, thank you very much again for joining us today. Leave us a comment if you like what you heard. And talk to you next time, or see you in Salzburg, maybe. Yeah. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.